Hello, this is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thank you for listening. I appreciate your time. And boy, there's a whole lot going on, so I'm not going to do anything except cut to the chase and introduce my guest, which I really enjoy talking with her. Penny Kelly, we've talked before and about a lot of different topics, energy, consciousness, Dr. Levengood in terms of interesting science that had to do with crop circles. And Penny is continuing to expand her horizons. I wanted to get into, with all of this stuff going on and all of the fear and the drama and the trauma and all of that, how to reconnect and center yourself when the world around you is going nuts. And I thought, who better to be able to address that than somebody who went through a kundalini awakening that threw her completely off kilter and reformatted the hard drive from that. Was that a good introduction, Penny?
I think it's great. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, I just, you know, who better to kind of say, all right, now we know that the world is not exactly the way we thought. Matter of fact, it's completely upside down, backwards, and inside out from what we thought. So what next? You've got that down.
Yeah. You know, I think that whole point about how do we get reconnected, the question is, what are we reconnecting with? How we do that depends on what we're trying to reconnect with. And I think one of the major anchoring points for that reconnection is Mother Nature. If you're in the midst of lots of drama and the craziness that is going on everywhere around the world, if you just, you know, turn off the computer and put down the telephone and put down the, you know, the iPad and all those things, and just go outside and stand there in Mother Nature and listen to the wind and let the sun fall on your face, or, you know, you just walk across the yard. What you realize almost immediately is that none of that drama is happening for the sun, the wind, the rain, you know, the plants, the trees. All that drama is made up by humans. And what happens is you end up kind of pulling away from that just a little bit, reconnecting to nature, which then reconnects you to the inner self. And that's where the truth is. It's in the inner self. So at some point you have to find and or make and then use those doorways that go into the inner self from time to time. Meditation is always helpful.
And see, part of that, I mean, you come from a background of having had some tremendous experiences being in and out of a state of awareness, in awareness in terms of this logical, more connected physical reality, that out of awareness. And I think that's an expanded awareness of the stuff that we don't see that's right beside us. You've had those incredible out-of-body experiences that you were just in and out between dimensions, between anything. And I think when somebody experiences that, everything else pales in comparison because you realize, oh, wow.
Yeah. I think it's, I think the big aha or the big like, oh God, now what, or what just happened? You know, all those questions that run through you, those come from this really deep, I mean, whether somebody actually says the words or not, there's this really deep understanding that that reality is not like we grew up thinking. The nature of reality is totally different. And we have not been encouraged to understand the nature of reality. And therefore, consciousness has been used against us. And we are fully conscious beings operating at about, I'm going to say 5%, you know, of our potential. But the fact of the matter is that reality is very different from what we grow up believing. And when you first begin to break down those, you know, those normal limitations and do things that nobody ever talked about, there is this kind of a shock, like, you know. And everything is different. And you're right, it pales so, I mean, the whole rest of reality just becomes irrelevant because the drive is to know what just happened? What did I just do? How do I explain that? How does that fit in the picture of reality? And that is something that very few people have bothered to go after and get answers for. And of course, you know, I couldn't let go of the question.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So here we are.
One of the things I wanted to get into, and you happen to go across this in your book, Consciousness and Energy, the volume 3, and I've got like 4 or 5 Casa Neta books that I was revisiting in over the summer. I thought, oh, let's go take a look, A Separate Reality and Magical Passes and stuff like that. And this is when I had known about Carlos Castaneda. Is a teenager, and I thought, okay, his stuff is kind of out there. It's you know, it's all fiction. It's out there, and so when I first had my little shift, I thought, well, I'll pick up this book, and maybe because I knew the person I was with was interested, and I showed it to him, and he was beyond that. And so I looked at it, I opened it up, and I happened to turn to a page where it said that there was a candle-like energy floating in the air beside him, and I'm like, oh. That had just happened for me. And I thought, whoa, wait a second. Maybe he's not as, you know, maybe there's more to it. And it's taken, you know, years of going back and forth and in between and realizing, just like you said in there, it wasn't about Castaneda. He missed the point.
Yes, he did. It was tragic.
Yes. I was thinking, oh my. And he did such a wonderful job of presenting it in a very wonderful story. But the underlying theme and the whole thing that activates it is that energy connection, that non-physical element that he's talking around, but never got into. Does that make sense?
Yes. That's exactly what happened. It was really a sad story. You know, when I finally discovered, you know, the whole truth about him and how he was sort of defrocked or uncrowned.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Yeah, labeled a fraud.
Yeah, right, and his doctorate was revoked, and lots of people just poo-poo. But you know what? There's a lot of truth in his writings. And the later writings, where he started to embellish a few things, I think he embellished in some places that it was because he didn't really understand what the concept was or how that was happening, because he kept trying to maintain this power over other people instead of power within the self. And I think he was afraid of his own power. So he never got there.
The magic, though, in those books is very real.
Yes, it is.
And that's what I thought was fabulous. Sometimes you have to wrap something really, really super important and a bit of a treasure that is so incredibly powerful in a way that people don't stumble upon it and misuse it because they miss the point. And so I think that might have been a little bit of that trickster element going, how much of this do you really want to get into? How much work are you willing to do? And I think Castaneda, with the ego, derailed.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. And his personal life was a mess. And I, you know, I was like, oh, wow.
We're human.
Really living it up.
We're human, aren't we? Yes.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
But that's why that part I wanted to get into now, because a lot of that, there are so many elements now that I think people are hearing more. They're becoming more familiar. The stuff I hear is so, to me, positive and encouraging that people are beginning to contemplate the fact that there are other things here that even if I don't see them, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Somebody else can see it, and it doesn't mean they're crazy. It means we are all getting into this thing at our own level of comfort. And the more comfortable we become, the more our awareness expands so we can see stuff that we might otherwise say, well, because 99% of it don't experience it. It isn't real and it doesn't exist. That's wrong. That isn't the way we work.
You're right. I think the fact that 99% might not experience it is just that they haven't experienced it yet. That doesn't mean it isn't real. It just means, you know, if you're in kindergarten, you have certain skill levels, et cetera. You're not going to write a 20-page paper. You know, when you get to be a senior or you're in college, a 20-page paper is, you know, that's one of the things that you are expected to do. And it's the same thing in the reality system. If you haven't ever looked at your reality, and that's really one of the reasons I wrote my books, was to be able to lay out in as clear a fashion as possible the things that occur during spiritual awakening or development of consciousness, as I like to call it, and, you know, how they happen, what to notice, what it means, you know, how what the aftermath of that is, so that people would begin to recognize, oh, I had that, but I didn't do anything with it. And I've had lots and lots and lots of people call or write and say, oh my, I recognize so many things that I had experienced that I just kind of blew off or just kind of kept going. I didn't know what to do with them. They didn't fit into any context. And so, you know, they just ignore it. And all of a sudden, belatedly, they're having this massive, you know, it's all coming together kind of awakening. And they're realizing that they're further along than they thought they were in terms of their capacities and their abilities to understand. And, you know, I know without a doubt that we are moving toward some levels of consciousness that I don't think we have even dreamed of. And I don't think I could have imagined any of it if I hadn't experienced it. And so, you know, that's very encouraging. We are moving toward what you could even call it the God state. You know, people get all bent out of shape when they hear the word God. And they have no idea what they're talking about. If you ask them, well, what is God? They give you some textbook gobbledygook, and it doesn't mean anything. It stands for something, but it really doesn't mean anything. So the word God has become this very important symbol that nobody really gets. But when you have been into the Godhead and you understand what God is and you know what that is firsthand, and then you begin to experience some of the states of consciousness that are possible between this level and that full God state, then you can begin to say, oh, wow, we are headed toward some fabulous ways of being, toward a fabulous human that is much more than human. And I think that we have not understood, you know, one of the definitions I was taught of God way back when I was a little kid going to catechism was that God was all-knowing, all-powerful, and everywhere present. And I thought, okay, yeah, that's God, all-knowing, all-powerful, everywhere present. And when I, the first time I went into an all-knowing, all-powerful state, I was just blown away. Afterwards, I thought, OMG, what was that? Because when you are all-knowing, there's no limits on your knowledge, and you know everything all at once, and you know past and present and future all at once for every single molecule of existence. And there's no way to logically organize that kind of knowing. You have to enter a different state of consciousness in which that's the norm. And what is not normal when you're in that state is movement and anything frivolous. You're not in a place where you want to think, but you need full control, I'm going to call it. I hate that word control in some ways, but you need to be in full control of all your faculties, because if you have a stray thought in that all-powerful state, you are going to do something. You're going to make something happen. If it's a good stray thought, something good is going to happen. If it's a bad stray thought, something bad is going to happen. Because what thought you have goes out as a message to all of those other molecules of consciousness, I guess I'll call it. And they are so cooperative that they want to do exactly what will make you happy. They are adjusting themselves constantly to what will make you happy. At that level, the power is extraordinary. And so you can't be thinking, you know, well, she's an idiot, or, you know, that thing is ugly, somebody ought to tear that down, or, you know, that, you know, shut that dog up, you know, I want to kill that dog. That, you don't,
all the negatives.
Don't talk like that. Yeah, right. Those are not okay. And so we cannot even begin to access that kind of power until we at least make some effort to begin to stay in this place of peacefulness and be willing to enter the what I'll call the place of silence, because in that place of silence is something that is very, very powerful. And it's you. You're the one that's very powerful. And everything else is very powerful as well. And it's just, you know, it's almost like a state of intense quiet, intense peacefulness. And everybody or everything is enjoying existence at a level that we can't even imagine. And when I look at what's going on in the news and hear, you know, watch a little TV or the radio or whatever, and look at the craziness and the contradictions, and I think, wow, is anybody enjoying existence? Or are they all just, you know, up in arms about everything?
And I think the gossip columnists are having a heyday. They're the ones who are really enjoying the heck out of themselves. This is the best fodder they could possibly ask for.
I know. It is. I have to say, it's just a crazy period of time. And, you know, somebody sent me, I was thinking about buying some digital coin, Bitcoin or OneCoin or something like that. And so, you know, my kids send me all this stuff. Oh, no, don't buy that. That's bad stuff. That, you know, I'm sending all this stuff. And so I read it all. Uh-huh. And it struck me that all of this financial talk was very, it was all negative. It was all contradictory. It was all hyperbole. Mm-hmm. And it was very similar to all the political talk and all the medical talk and all the educational talk. And I thought, oh, we are just in a place where, you know, it's almost impossible to know who to listen to, what to believe. And so you're forced to revert to yourself.
Yes.
What do you want? Period.
In a way, I think it's the best possible thing that could happen. Let me give you an example, because I am obviously connected to the media, doing traffic for a radio station and going in and seeing all that and then having to tune out. You kind of have, there's so much overwhelm and overload. It's really a challenge to be focused.
Wow.
But one of the things that I do focus on is quirky stuff and unusual things in the news. And one of them recently is the fact that there was a little altercation, an out and out brawl at a place called Chuck E. Cheese. Okay. Oh. So this is where kids go. Parents take their kids to be entertained. And this is what's happening is the parents are running amok. And they said that they called the police immediately. They got them there on the scene really quickly. And when they showed up, they saw the parents fighting and the children running away. That's the way it was worded. I'm like, oh, hallelujah. This is too good. This is too good to be real. No, it's real. They showed up. And what was the cause? They said, what was the cause of this? Apparently, somebody looked wrong at somebody else. This is what's in this media release and saying somebody, you know, gave them the eye. They didn't like the way they were looking at them. And this all started. And then they've got this little wonderful video that follows the chaos that's ensuing. And you're seeing these are adults. The children are just sitting there going, ah, the parents are going at it. And then the bottom line is, since we're at this time of year in this particular moment in our life, these people are all going to vote now. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
That brings it, you know, front and center. It's like here we have these high expectations of everybody on the planet. And right there at Chuck E. Cheese, that shows you where logic lies. It doesn't make sense.
You know, as I've been looking at the world, what I see happening everywhere is that the truth is sprouting. And all of the illusions that were planted, all the stories, all the lies, all the twisted information that's somewhat correct but not quite, all of that is being exposed. And so what we have is this period of craziness that is where people are saying, what? You know, I thought this, I thought that. And And the truth is coming out at so many levels, and it's really hard for people to get their minds around that. And they're angry. And so if somebody gives you a sideways look, you know, boom.
It's like, there goes the pizza.
Yeah.
Right. But that part of it, though, is it's very humanizing. It's very, yeah, very humanizing to know, look, we are all in this doing the best that we can. And even, you know, the person that we think is the most powerful, the most corrupt, the most honest, the most dishonest, they're doing the best they can. And yeah, that's what it's about. So the only thing you can do is go back to the core and say, is this where I want to be at this time? And am I doing the best I can? And if I have done my due diligence, whatever the result is, it may not come anywhere near to what I hope as an outcome, but I know I will have contributed and life goes forward. And that's the thing, is it's trying to micromanage it and blame everybody or push all sorts of, I think in terms of inferences that somebody else could do this all by themselves, that's illogical. And this is everything is a dance. Everybody is in some way, shape, or form contributing. And so the way that I can bring that back is to say, I will contribute what I can, when I can, with the best of my ability and my knowing, and stop trying to jump to conclusions and predict things that it really won't do me any good to predict.
That is really, you have hit it right on the head. It doesn't do any good to try to predict what's coming or what's going to happen. You just deal with it. Just deal with it on a day-to-day, moment-by-moment basis. Stay in the now, and, you know, you'll have some sort of peacefulness. Some kind of inner guide can then speak up if you're quiet enough to listen. And when you get going in circles like a small tornado and your mind is so not quiet, you can't get any of that guidance that is so available. And we need that.
Part of that, too, was in that particular instance to me, it really illustrated how easy it is to be caught up in somebody else's chaos without, that isn't why they went out that night. Those families showed up to go out with their kids, maybe, you know, take a break, have some relief and not have to worry about all the drama. And all of a sudden they're caught in this huge, overblown, media viral catastrophe going, oh my gosh, I was in, I can't undo it. You know, there's no delete. And that's how quickly it happens. It just, so that's part of it. When we look at that and say, here's one for the gossip columnist. It's another thing of saying that we are very human, and it's difficult to be 100% peaceful or logical or well-intentioned all of the time. It's a good aspiration, but in theory, that's how it works as an aspiration.
Yeah. And
in practice, it doesn't hold up.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No, go ahead. That's it.
If you want to be logical all the time, you're cutting off half of yourself, because there's a half or a big portion of yourself, maybe even the whole self, that really is the intuitive side. It's the side that knows. It's the side that feels the truth. You know, feeling is primary. Logic is not. Logic is a construct. So, you know, feeling is what you have to go by. And, you know, people ask me from time to time, well, how do you tell, you know, what makes you think that that might not be right, or that this is the best choice, or that's, you know, you need to avoid that selection over there. And I tell them it's because I have learned to detect the most subtle changes in my feeling state. There's a feeling of peacefulness, truthfulness, pleasure, joy, relaxation, whatever you want to call it, when you are making the right decision. If you're making the wrong decision, you're not there. You're unsettled. The feeling is one of being unsettled. And that is the difference. And people don't pay attention to feelings. And I think, you know, they have had so much hurtful stuff happen that they don't want to pay attention to feeling. And that's where all of the... That's where the truth is in the feeling. That's where the intuition is in that very subtle shift in your feeling state. And what you feel is, what literally happens is that the energy body, which is a house of plasma fields, when you are going to get or make a bad choice, it knows that. That all-knowing part of you sees the future, knows what's coming, and so it adjusts accordingly. And if you can pick that up, you can often avoid a lot of difficulty.
We got to take a break. I want to come back, though, with some of your other stuff that will give people an idea of why the world to you is a lot larger and this non-physical is much more real, because that will give them, if they haven't heard your talk and your information, it's fantastic. And I want to give them that little peek into what you get to see that is fantastic. Okay, so Penny Kelly, coming up with more of her, and you can check out her website, pennykelly.com. This is Conscious Living.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Instado. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Consciousness and energy. My guest, Penny Kelly. You've probably heard her before if you've listened to any of my past shows, and I've talked to her 2 or 3 times. But it's just, there's so much content I can never get everything in, you know, one conversation. And that's because it's just, you've had such tremendous experiences. When we're talking about, you know, the in and out of body stuff, the Kundalini awakening, the robes, the all this, and the crop circles. And that's the one recently you were involved with, a movie talking about the details behind the scenes of that. Penny, you've just got so much content.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot there. I think, one of the things that, when I came to this mud ball, one of the things that I had in my head was that I was going to document my life because I knew it was different. And You know, so that I've tried to do. I've tried to leave a record of this is what an ordinary person starts out doing, and then this happens, and then that happens. And, you know, and if you just continue to work with it, all the answers do not come at once. And, you know, and I have problems with a lot of people who say, oh, we're heading toward ascension. And for them, ascension means some sort of currency reset and they're going to have money. And I'm like, oh, my God, not even close. You know, but there's, I think the important thing is that the human body is an energy system. It's a plasma system. It's a house of plasmas. And, you know, and I've had, courtesy of Dr. Levengood, I've had 15 years or 12 years, whatever it was, of just, you know, private tutoring in biophysics and plasma physics and astrophysics. And so what happens is you begin to understand how plasmas behave, how they're formed, what happens when there's a change, how they interact. And the bottom line with a plasma is that it responds directly and immediately to consciousness. And I think that that has yet to sink in. I think it's like Levengood said, it takes 50 years for scientific information to filter down into the consciousness of people. And so we're in the filtering process now. But the fact of the matter is that consciousness does impact plasma, and therefore you can have an effect on your physical body or on anything else. And it's the problem is, like what I said earlier, we're only operating at 5% of our capacity, so we don't have much power. But still, repetitive thought is very, very powerful. And sometimes you can enter into these states of, you know, feeling powerful. Sometimes, you know, there's so many things. I don't even know where to begin.
I know. Well, part of it, though, with the shaman for centuries, this is an area that of their expertise that they have kept in closed circles for reasons. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, the martial arts, when you're talking about Qigong or those kinds of movements, and they do affect energy, vibration, frequency, the whole nine yards. That's all a product of that learning, of that teaching, of that practice. And that's still, for some people, is like an imaginary concept. And it's like, oh my gosh, no, it's beyond real.
Yeah. You know, plasma is the basis of all matter. If you can learn to manipulate plasma, you can learn to create matter or destroy it. Mm-hmm. It goes both ways. And so I think, you know, one of the things that we did, Dr. Levengood and I, in the lab was really kind of research. We started out, of course, with just researching the crop circles and trying to, you know, he was trying to figure out what the heck made all those plants lay down like that, you know, and that question eventually did get answered, which I talked about in Volume 2 of my Consciousness Energy series. But I think the other pieces in that same process of figuring out crop circles were other pieces of, you know, working with charge density plasmas and what they did and how they behaved and the fact that they were self-organizing. I mean, we were just boggled by the fact that they're self-organizing. It's like, ooh, how is that happening? That means that they are intelligent.
Yes.
That means that they're aware and conscious of what they're trying to make happen. And that was just like, oh, wow. So, you know, and then it proceeded from there.
An understatement. And then it proceeded from there.
Yeah. Well, you know, just all kinds of different bits of research. We learned how to track consciousness. We learned how to, you know, track collective consciousness as well as individual consciousness. And just did all kinds of experiments and pieces of work that really point to the fact that we are evolving into something beyond what we are now, and that there are other beings who have already evolved beyond this stage of development.
I took a picture about five or maybe seven, somewhere in that years ago, by this incredible tree. I think it's so fantastic. It's been around a long time, and there's a lot of energy in the space. And you've worked with these plant energies and those mm-hmm. little spirits and stuff, and it's just full of that. When I took the picture, to me, you know, people talk about orbs and stuff, but this is a being that crosses in two or three different pictures across our viewpoint. And my husband took a picture, I took a couple, each of us with that camera. It wasn't responding to just one, and it wasn't something that was wrong with the camera. But the picture is, if you would make a watercolor, and there's a little yellow, and then there's three little blobs in the middle. They're gold and green and blue tones throughout this watercolor. And to me, that was, without knowing it at the time, a plasma being that happened because of our frequency to appear in our area. And I've never seen anything quite like it. That's because I haven't, you know, lived 24 hours a day for 70 or 80 million years. Anyway.
Yeah.
I anticipate,
I get that.
Yeah. So I know it exists, but the thing of seeing it and going, it's not an orb, and it's not the angel, and it's not, you know, all this other stuff that people want to lay on it. It's a being. It's something else that exists alongside us that sometimes we might be able to see, even though I couldn't see it physically. I could see it with the way that the digital worked. And it was like, oh my, here's an example of stuff that is around us that I believe is sentient and quite aware of, you know, the need to get out of our way, or the need to, you know, work around us because we're not quite there yet. And I thought, but there's so much of a willingness, a consensual willingness to say this isn't real and it doesn't exist. And, oh, you know, you've obviously got something wrong with a camera, or it's a discounting automatically. The first it's, oh, fake. Oh, it's fraud. Somebody manipulated it, blah, blah, blah. Instead of going, well, what if, and I think we're on the cusp of the what if moment, because so many people are having these anomalous experiences. It's forcing a reconsideration of what is.
I think you're right, and I think that it's really good. I think that the camera and the internet have been two of the biggest factors in that what-if kind of opening that has occurred. People are seeing, oh, I'm not the only one. Look at all those people over there on that chat room or on that website or whatever. They're all saying the same thing, or they have similar pictures. And, you know, it's hard to discount the kinds of data that are accumulating at this point in time and to just poo-poo it all away. So there's known mathematical and scientific principles that the huge majority of people do not have any clue about. And then all the scientists, because they're only interested in the science and they aren't paying attention to what's happening in, quote, metaphysics, or, you know, woo-woo circles. So they aren't able to extract, you know, what might be useful or helpful or what might be an explanation, et cetera, in terms of my science over here. And they're not looking at crop circle designs, which are almost all mathematical. And they aren't looking at, you know, plasma, photos of plasma. You know, they have all kinds of theories over here. But when you get some kind of action or motion happening, they get interested. But, you know, they miss, it just takes so long for that cross-pollinization to happen mm-hmm. that, you know, we just kind of drift along in our ignorance, which is really sad.
I want to get to the next level. Your out-of-body experiences, when you were exploring, what... Mm-hmm. The benefit, the overview, the takeaway from that, how did that change you?
Oh, well, after I got past the stage of being scared to death, you know, then I got to the point where I was curious, and there were two bottom line takeaways that came from that ability. The first one is that consciousness, You can focus your mind, your attention, in any place in space and time in the entire spectrum, any place, because it's all conscious. It's all conscious, every bit of it. and every bit of it can be communicated with. So that was one thing. You can focus your attention anywhere, and the consciousness of that time and place will come to you. You just have to be open to it. I think the second thing, which was even more mind-boggling, was that I began to be out of the body so much that I started to see a body form where I was. And that left me with only one conclusion, that wherever you put your consciousness, a body forms. And that then leaves us with this multidimensional, aspect of our experience. And, you know, and most people haven't even begun to go there. They're still tripping over the out-of-body, the OBE, the simple OBE.
Yeah. Right.
But the fact of the matter is that I think we could put our attention somewhere, create a body. It actually forms if you stay long enough. A body begins to form. You'll see first this misty kind of cloud-like shape forming in the, you know, in just floating in space. And then it begins to take shape as arms and legs, and then you become a real body of just, you know, with skin and bones and et cetera. And what becomes clear is that we have the capacity to be in two or three or more places at one time. And that just really makes it hard for people to get their mind around that. So those are the two takeaways.
Yeah, it's multidimensional being. And that when you read about people who've had encounters with a shaman or encounters with people who are, sometimes they're called immortal. It depends on what religion, what ethnicity, what background, what sociology you've been, I guess, grown into. That is so fantastic to know that this is ongoing. It isn't just a particular lifestyle, a particular religion, a certain part of the country or the world. This is all over. We just use different bits of language and different definitions to describe the same instance. And that's where we, I think, are growing with this internet connection and our exposure to different cultures and lifestyles. It's like, this is extraordinary. And that's why I wanted you to tell your story too, again and again, because there are people, somebody right now is hearing this for the first time and saying, whoa, I didn't know she did that. And that's makes it more, I think, accessible to the next person who wants to at least expand their horizon in terms of thinking and saying, what's the potential? Could I do that too? Of course you can. It's just a matter of, how much do you want to work at it? And maybe you won't have to work. Maybe it will just be spontaneous.
Yes. And, you know, let me point out something here. I don't know if we talked about it before, but it bears repeating because it takes a little bit to get your mind around it. In science, there's a well-accepted and understood, principle that if you are a simple hydrogen atom, you know, you're a simple sphere. Okay, and you have a basic level of energy that you need to stay as a simple sphere. In other words, you have to have a certain amount of energy to maintain your form. So if that simple hydrogen atom becomes able to get access to more energy, or it gets hit by more energy, and here's the rule, here's the thing to keep in mind, is that everything is looking for more energy because that is the path to transformation. So let's go back to the hydrogen thing. So now if you hit this this hydrogen atom with more energy and it's able to absorb that energy, then what happens is it reshapes and reforms itself. And instead of a simple sphere, it now splits into two adjoining spheres with a small bar in between, a connecting link that holds those two spheres together. And as soon as it changes with this new energy, it changes shape, it changes function, and it has new characteristics and chemical properties. If you hit it, if you hit that with another wave of energy and it's able to absorb that, it changes again. and becomes more complex. And at the present time, there are five known levels of energy absorption that molecules are capable of, and each one is a reformation to greater complexity and amazing characteristics and more properties and more chemical functions. And so if you just take the whole Kundalini experience, which is this massive influx of energy through the energy body that reorganizes your entire body, what you get is a whole new set of characteristics and functions that you didn't have before. And that is where the clairvoyance and the clairaudience and clairsentience, and that's where the out-of-body experiences become possible, become second nature. That's where you can begin to hear what's going on 50 miles away or impact people's energy 200 miles away or further, or see things before they happen, or hear the truth and recognize the truth, and then hear things that are not quite true and recognize that that's not quite true, and then sometimes see what is true, even though you haven't heard or read anything about that. And so what happens is that there's this steady progression. We are at least, I hear people talk about we're entering something they call fifth density or fourth density or something.
Yes, 5D, 4D, yeah.
Yeah, and they really don't know what they're talking about. But there is actually a parallel to that in the world of science, in which as you move up through these five levels, your characteristics and your consciousness, your physical chemistry, everything about you becomes different. And so one of the things, I mentioned before that has been, tracked on me or in me is that most people have a range of maybe 10 cycles per second is their frequency range that they can actually literally pay attention to, and mine is 40. And so it's four times greater than the average, and there's that just opens up. That goes back to that question you said just before the break. What makes your world so much bigger? It's that I have access to so many frequencies and so many dimensions, including when you get two frequencies that are operational that have non-compatible frequencies, they will create a third binaural frequency, which then it becomes a dimension all by itself. And so there are what I call hybrid dimensions out there. The technical term would be binaural dimensions out there. And all the world is much more complex and much more interesting and much more dynamic and peopled with all sorts of forms of intelligence than we generally think there are. And we are so, just so not encouraged, even discouraged and made fun of, if you do something outside the box.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, that's where all the excitement is. It's outside the box.
Yep. I second that. So when you're doing the 40 thing on me, what does that give you the ability to see if you can disclose that without, causing due harm?
Yeah.
Or undue harm.
Well, typically I use it for, let me say this before I answer your question. And I just got this question from somebody, over in Pennsylvania, do you know when I'm thinking of you? And the answer is yes, sometimes I do, but no. Most times I'm not paying attention because I have stuff to do. I have my bills to pay and I have my chickens to feed and I have,
It's not all about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So the answer is yes, if I'm in a quiet place and all of a sudden, and I live in this pool of peace and that pool of peace is very quiet. And if all of a sudden a ripple comes across that pool, and it's your signature, I'm going to know that you're thinking of me, talking of me, or coming to visit me, or going to call, or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there is that. Having said that, the whole question of what do I do with the 40 cycles per second?
Yes.
I go into a place where there is no judgment and where you see forward and backward in time. And I basically use that to look at people's past lives when they, if they set up an appointment, then the first time, not every time, but the first time, I will look at, what kinds of influences your numbers are having on you, which are your birth numbers. The numbers don't do anything, but they represent certain forces that work on you, and what's your interaction with those forces. The second thing is looking at past lives that you've had that are unresolved, and what were the issues in those, and how are those issues playing out in today's world? And, what are you needing to face? What are you needing to look at? What are you needing to take in? What gifts are you needing to develop and celebrate, et cetera? So I typically try to limit it to that. Mm-hmm. There are other times when I will do certain ceremonial kinds of things in which I look at, the greater picture and see where are we going, what do I see? And you never know what you're going to see. But, for instance, one of the things I was remembering was a ceremony that I did, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, in which I was just looking at the future. And I was looking at the future of the government or the presidential function in the United States. And what I saw was that whoever was elected and or was president in 2017 was likely to be run out of Washington on a rail, kind of tarred and feathered sort of thing.
Okay. All right.
And I thought, so you can just tuck that little piece of information in mm-hmm. your, I didn't see who it was. I just saw that the people were very unhappy with that. And, mm-hmm. and so I, you just put that away and you don't do anything with it. You just know. And then that leaves you in a place of being prepared for whatever is going to happen.
Okay. It sounds like the movie Brother, Where Art Thou?
Brother what? Oh, where are you?
Brother, Where Art Thou? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I did love that movie. That's one of probably 10 movies I've seen in my life.
That and the soundtrack, that's a gem. It's a gem. So if you, and it's worth watching again. That kind of puts a perspective on all that. That's part of this too, that I like the way you said, you don't do anything with it. You just let it sit because really it's something that's playing out and it isn't necessary to change it. The awareness comes from everybody else being part of the equation to work through it.
That's right. That's right. And sometimes, like if it's something in my family or in my children that I see coming, a couple years ahead, depending on what it is, I can be ready to support or nurture or teach or, if it's something really, really tragic, maybe avoid that or lessen it in some way. You don't, there's lots of talk about don't get in the way of my karma, Did you have permission to do that? That really isn't the way the world works. It's nice to be polite and think like that. But the fact of the matter is we are all communicating 100% all of the time and impacting one another 100% all of the time. And nobody's asking permission. You give permission when you come to this particular reality system.
You showed up now. Get ready for the lesson. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think, there's so many, as I've vacillated between do no harm and I have to help and it might be harmful, but I don't know how it's going to work out, but it's the best intention. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but to be who I am, I have to go with, this is what I am. I'm in my heart guided to do. And
it may not
be the best thing in terms of everybody else's opinion of it, but it's me. And so that's where it gets tough of, trying to follow everybody else's guidelines and going by a certain belief system and then coming back to, well, how does that sit with me?
Yes, you got it. And I think what happens is as you evolve and develop yourself, as you come to this place of inner authority And you can't rest in that inner authority unless and until you come to this place where you become this fountain of love. And that love is going to flow. It's going to flow in every direction with everything and everybody. And I get a lot of complaints from people who say to me, well, didn't you see what he did? Or didn't you hear what he said? Weren't you upset about it? And I'm like, no. You love. And when you love, you end up trusting that it is love that's motivating you. And you come to this place that I tell my students, you know, always in the very first class and all the way through, I want you to come to the place where you will be able to, you know, slap your hand on the table and say, because I said so. And when you say that, it's because you know that that is good. That is something, you're trusting that love to make a good thing happen.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm glad you said so.
Yes.
We got to get out of here. Penny, I love talking with you. We'll talk again. If you're listening, it's pennykelly.com. See ya.
Okay. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye.